Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side. It ain't the left side or the right side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode here of On the Fin Side with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, as well as FinFanatic.com and the Fansided Network. I'm Brian Kat, NFL. Paul is Fanatic underscore pick on Twitter. A lot to cover here today, and we're doing this show here on Sunday morning for a couple of reasons. One, we're going to talk about the Senior Bowl and the players that stuck out and what that could mean for the Dolphins as they pick 29th in the NFL draft. We're going to talk about a lot of drama going on in Miami, as largely surrounding Brian Flores' lawsuit against the NFL, really against the entirety of the NFL, as well as directed toward the Miami Dolphins. And we're going to talk about, most importantly, the Dolphins' ongoing coach search. And we'll start there, Paul. So the Dolphins spent 10 hours with Mike McDaniel, according to reports, on Friday. And then yesterday, on Saturday, they interviewed Kellen Moore. No news as of now what the results of those discussions were. But now here we are on Sunday waiting for news here. Your thoughts, are you leaning one way or the other? Any guesses of what you think is going to happen?
I mean, I've been leaning McDaniel for weeks. The fact that Anthony Lynn got hired by the 49ers to come in and be that innovative run game guy speaks some volumes there for what I think is about to happen. The fact that, you know, it's Kellen Moore. I like Kellen Moore. I like him more than some folks do. But again, it's to me, this is McDaniel's job to lose. The fact that I think he's fully on board with what the Dolphins want to do, how they want to do it, and to still have the control possible, I really like the move if they do it.
That's where I'm at too, almost word for word. I mean, look, and for if I went off the deep end yesterday on Twitter toward a few people, because I'm so sick and tired of this. Why would you hire McDaniel? It's just like hiring Adam Gase or Joe Philbin. I'm like, that is such a lazy opinion. I don't know where to start.
They're stereotyping. Don't do it, folks.
Right. They are nothing alike. Mike McDaniel developed and created an entire offensive running game system that is lauded by his organization across the board. Okay. Joe Philbin was basically a right-hand man to Aaron Rodgers and to Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. He did not call plays. He didn't design offenses. He didn't do anything. And we saw that pretty quickly here in Miami. With Adam Gase, yes, there were a lot of people, including Peyton Manning and Mike Martz, who said this guy was a genius, blah, blah, blah. But we never saw any of that resembled in his play calling. Everything was very, very vanilla. As far as his play calling was concerned, in Denver, in Chicago, everywhere that he was, and he was even a worse leader. So That's not the case. And look, if you're going to say, oh, this guy's going to be gone in 3 or 4 years, well, based on the law of averages, you're probably going to be right, because most coaches are gone in their first 3 or 4 years. But this, to me, Mike McDaniel is the best way to go. I'm with you too. I like Kellen Moore more than a lot of people. Yes, he's only been a head coach, or only been a coordinator for 3 years, only been a coach for 4 years. He's only been not an NFL player for 5 years. So yeah, the question with him is, well, is the coaches or the coaches that he's going to be able to bring to Miami or not bring. Whereas McDaniel has worked with 6 different organizations. He's worked with a lot of different people, and you can bet he has a further reach as far as the coordinators that he can bring to Miami.
He does. And one thing I like about these guys is they're young. They're not too young, but both offenses, if you look at San Francisco and you look at Dallas, have done some innovative things and have found ways to capitalize on the personnel that they have on that roster, and in some cases, all of the personnel that they have on that roster. One of the things I really love, and we're going to talk about McDaniel with this, is the toss dives and toss counters. And there was a hilarious interaction between him, I want to say it was either this past year or the year before, and the media, where they asked him, they said, you know, well, what are you thinking when you toss the ball straight back and instead of going on a sweep, the running back actually dives or even runs a counter. When typically when you toss the ball like that, it's a sweep, and everybody knows that. And he's like, and McDaniel looked at him and goes, you just answered your own question. Like, and if you watch footage of those type of plays, and they're little things, but you watch him single-handedly with those type of plays put a defense on ice skates. And I've got news for you. Plays like that, even if the Dolphins didn't touch their offensive line this offseason, things like that make an offensive line look better, because you're taking the defensive players and taking them off their spot. You're taking those defensive players and making them sit back and process what's going on and what's in front of them. And whenever that's the case, it only helps you win your matchups. So there are a lot of things he does immediately, even without any personnel moves.
Well, we saw two in the playoffs. I mean, what do you do when Trent Williams is a tight end all of a sudden? I mean,
Not even a tight end, a wingback in motion.
Right. And that creativity is what's needed in the NFL. The biggest thing that I hear, and you hear this on NFL broadcasts all the time, is, hey, they just line up and play their own game. They don't do anything fancy. That I'm like, okay, well, then that's stupid. You should be creative and innovative all the time and get players on your team who are smart enough and good enough to carry that out. And
you mean like our innovative defense that we instead played vanilla for the first 8 weeks of the season?
That and for the previous 10 years with all these Bengals defensive coordinators who you knew where each player was going to be on every play. And the hope is, well, we're just going to line up and beat you and force you into doing stupid things you otherwise wouldn't do. Well, those things don't work.
Well, so, one of the only times I've ever seen that work was when Dave Wannstedt was the coach of the Miami Dolphins, and he had Ricky Williams in the backfield who superseded the stupidity of his play calling.
That, and imagine if they had put any ounce of energy into getting an upgrade over Jay Fiedler in those years. And I was a Fiedler defender for a little while, because I thought, hey, can't get mad at the guy because he didn't make himself starting quarterback. The coach did. I mean, that's a different conversation. So, yeah, I'm with you there on Mike McDaniel. Speaking of head coaches, our previous head coach, Brian Flores, made some incredibly interesting news this past week with a 58-page lawsuit directed toward the NFL, their hiring practices, as well as 2 very specific allegations, and serious ones, against the Miami Dolphins, accusing Steve Ross of offering him very directly in 2019 $100,000 per loss for each game. Number two, arrange a meeting on supposedly an arranged meeting on Steve Ross's yacht with a prominent quarterback who is believed to have been Tom Brady. So before we get into the racism allegations here of his lawsuit. We'll park right there for a second. I've got my own thoughts on this, Paul. What are your thoughts? First, starting with the allegation of Steve Ross offering Flores $100,000 to throw games.
If this can be proven, which I've really seen no shred of anything other than, oh, we think there's somebody else that kind of heard it, or Flores told other people about it when it happened. Like, Flores telling other people about it when it happened, guess what? Doesn't mean it happened. Like, it just, you know. And
let me ask you this, and I know I've been talking like this whole show, so I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do you think that this happened? Do you maybe. Think that conversation took place? Okay.
Maybe.
I'm going to say off that, I think it did happen, but I'm going to throw it back. I know there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I mean, and it may well have been, like, and we have zero context around it. We haven't even heard exactly, like, you know, we've all sat around with our buddies and coworkers or whatever over a drink at one point and been like, yeah, I'd pay you half my salary to do my job. Like, you know, or something stupid like that. Like, so we don't have context. And unfortunately, you know, I know you don't want to dive into the full aspect of the suit, but there's a hand-in-hand here for me with both portions of this lawsuit, the Steve Ross allegations and the racial allegations. That there's a huge problem in the NFL where we really don't have enough representation out there as far as coordinators, etc. go. Steve Ross, love him or hate him as an owner, has probably been the shining beacon for the NFL as far as diversity goes. Between the RISE initiative, which I've spent enough time talking to folks from RISE, etc., that, you know, this is a real thing trying to affect change. Between, if you look at the Dolphins front office, Chris Greer, Reggie McKenzie, Marvin Allen, you've got Jason Jenkins, who appears to be getting groomed to move even higher up the food chain at some point in time. You know, and you start, you've got Paola Argueletta. You know, it's Steve Ross has a very ethnically diverse staff in his front office. And you look at that and you look at some of the allegations that Flores is making, the fact that there isn't enough representation amongst coordinators. Guess what? Adam Gase's final year, he had a more diverse coaching staff than Brian Flores by far. You know, so it's,
yeah.
Brian Flores is not eating his own dog food on this. And the deeper you look at this, the worse it seems. The fact that he's making all these racial allegations, yet if he's truly going to stand as a man of integrity, in what world would he look to accept potentially the Texans head coaching job with the most racist NFL owner out there, at least on record?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that don't.
One last thing.
Don't match it.
Like, you look at the lawsuit, and it talks about diversity hires, and it mentions that there's only one minority coach in the NFL. No, there's not. Right now, there are three minority head coaches in the NFL. It's if we want to have this be about racial equality, it's got to be about all of it.
Right. All that's very well said. And let me say first that. There's one black head coach in the NFL, three head coaches of color in the NFL. I wish there were more. And, you know, I can understand the frustration surrounding that. That's why I really do want to do my best and do our best to be sensitive about that. On the other hand, and before I get to that, you know, there was a quote from somebody, I can't remember her name, African-American a commentator. I don't know if she's on ESPN. I can't remember her name, but she said something to the effect of, you know, it's just human nature to want to hire people that look and act more like you. And I think that's well said. And there are 32 white owners, and that lends itself to that point. You know, on the other hand, you know, it's, it also needs to be pointed out too. And I'm really not happy with the media, which I rarely am happy with the media, that they don't point out also certain other things here. There's no mention of in the last decade alone, 15 of 32 NFL teams have had a African-American head coach or a person of color as their head coach. Just a couple of years ago, in 2018, 9 of the 32 head coaches were African-American or a person of color. Okay. And there's also no mention of, you know, because the Broncos have been brought into this. Supposedly, you know, the accusation was about how John Elway and whoever the CEO was at the time basically showed up hungover to that interview with Brian Flores to supposedly just satisfy the Rooney Rule, which the Rooney Rule has been an utter failure in the NFL. It's been a failure and it continues to be a failure, and it's humiliating for coaches like Brian Flores to have to sit through those. And that needs to be addressed too. But I don't think you could take away the Rooney Rule, because it's going to be reported that they're taking more assets away from potential minority coaches. So I don't know what you do about that either. So it's a whole hodgepodge of things.
Well, and you know, we kicked off the show at the start of the hour talking about Mike McDaniel and Kellen Moore. And Kellen Moore went into that interview yesterday. You can't tell me he hasn't seen some of the news. If he hasn't, I'm worried about that. But the fact that his interview yesterday was very likely something that he had to absolutely knock out of the park to have a shot at McDaniels, to have a shot at overcoming what it sounds like is building for Mike McDaniel in Miami. And yet Kellen Moore went on the interview, probably did his best, and we'll hear something shortly. You know, like, it's, you know, just because they have a coach in mind that they like doesn't mean they're being racist.
And I'm going to point out something Stuart Wallace here said in chat. He said, am I missing something? I thought that Flores' issues with unfair and prejudiced hiring practices are against the league and the Giants and the Broncos, not against the Dolphins. Thank you for bringing that up there, Stuart. Where it ties into this and where it tied in the lawsuit is that what's said in there is that African-American coaches have to go so above and beyond their call of duty. And that's what happened with the Dolphins. And the evidence of that being the having to throw games. That's what the implication is in the lawsuit. And that is the part of the lawsuit that I disagree with, because
there's more to that though, too. It's the racial allegations are being levied against all 32 teams, just with two specific instances called out and two specific teams called out. But it does go on to say, you know, and because the Dolphins are already named, the 29 other franchises. So it's the racial allegations are being leveled against the NFL as a whole and to some degree to every franchise.
Got it. And the thought about this is in 2019, after Brian Flores did not go along with that, it was basically used against him in all other decisions that were made and how he was viewed within the organization, which eventually led to his firing. I have an issue with that too. And one specific part of that is, you just look at the free agent acquisitions that they've had over the last couple of years. I mean, Jason McCourty, Adam Butler, Kyle Van Noy, Ted Karras. I mean, all these former expatriates. Was that just a coincidence? Was that Chris Greer's doing? No, I think that Brian Flores had a major hand in that. If not, if it wasn't specifically a signing that he wanted. So I've got an issue with that too. So I'm, you know, I don't know. And I look at this, and the major thing that really set off Brian Flores too was the text message that he got accidentally from Bill Belichick that basically said to him, you know, heard you're the main guy for the Giants job or something to that effect. And he got Brian Daboll and Brian Flores confused. Everybody knows the story by this point here too. And the Giants have come out and vehemently denied that allegation. And this is the exact quote from the Giants. The allegation that the Giants' decision had been made prior to Friday evening, January 28th, is false. And to base that allegation on a text exchange with Bill Belichick, in which he ultimately states he thinks Brian Daboll will get the job, is irresponsible. The text exchange occurred the day before Coach Dable's in-person interview, and that's the main point in this, even took place. Giants ownership would never hire a head coach based on only a 20-minute Zoom interview, which is all Brian Daboll had at that point. And that, so here's my point is, I think Brian Flores is extremely brave for what he's doing at 40 years old, knowing this could compromise his career. But being brave and being accurate in what you're saying are not exactly the same thing.
So, Shake, I want to just mention something real quick. You mentioned Jim Caldwell, Lovie Smith, and Tony Dungy and their winning records. I can't fully comment on that just because I haven't sat and really analyzed everything about their seasons that they had, etc. I don't know. It may or may not have been. But as far as the Dolphins go, and Shake, I know you're here all the time. It's how many times this season have you heard me talk about the issues that I had coaching-wise, whether it was Flores, whether it was the offensive coordinator, whether it was the defensive coordinator, whether it was the quarterback's coach that was calling plays instead of our two offensive coordinators. I think I've been pointing at the coaching since week one as being an issue this year. And whether it's coordinators, assistants, you name it, the fact that Flo is the man in charge and didn't make the changes needed in a timely enough fashion. If we literally tried out that defense for a couple of weeks and said, nope, this isn't working, and went back to what worked with the personnel we had, we'd be in the playoffs. If Flo had been able to or work with a special teams coordinator to identify the issues with Polardi holding the ball that fans saw, we'd be in the playoffs. If Flo had figured out that you need to plan for rain and enforce that with his coordinators, maybe we'd be in the playoffs. Like, there's so many things you can point to throughout the season where coaching, whether it was Flores or one of his direct reports, truly let this team down. The fact that he couldn't use some of these offensive linemen that Chris Greer brought in that left here, went to another team, and immediately started.
Yeah.
Probably be in the playoffs. Like, it's the number of things that you can sit there and say, and some of them weren't even in hindsight. We were talking about them as they were going on and not happening. That's where, for me, the Flores thing, yeah, he had a winning record this year, but the record wasn't what it should have been. And the fact that he hasn't seemed like he's able to work very well with subordinates. Look at the turnover amongst coordinators. Patrick Graham, like, nah, I'm out. Like, for an equal job. It's a tough road to hoe with this one.
So, yes. And so overall, here's what I believe. Yes, I do think Steve Ross offered $100,000 a game to lose. I do believe that happened. Number one, because two things can be true. Yes, Flores has flaws. I don't agree with everything he said, but also the owner of the Dolphins is a bumbling doofus. I believe those two things can be true at once. And it goes very in line with how the Dolphins were thinking in 2019 when they traded Laremy Tunsil, when they traded Minkah Fitzpatrick, when they gutted their entire roster. I'm confused why they signed Ryan Fitzpatrick instead of just going with Josh Rosen all year. You know, because if that were the case, they probably would have Joe Burrow. But that's 2020 hindsight, too. You know, but if there's not, if this isn't more than a he said, she said conversation, I just don't understand where you go from there and how you could punish the Dolphins. And there's going to be an investigation, and the Dolphins have said, Steve Ross has said that they're going to be very cooperative with that. So we'll see what happens next. But as far as things you can prove, yes, you can absolutely prove Brian Flores had a really tough time working with anybody. Okay. I mean, you just the coaches, I mean, you have three different offensive coordinators in 3 years. You have three different offensive line coaches in 3 years. On the defensive side of the ball, you signed Kyle Van Noy, who supposedly had a great relationship with Flores, and then that all blows up specifically because of the relationship. Minkah Fitzpatrick refused to play for this guy and demanded a trade, which turned into Austin Jackson. Pat Flaherty, who was an offensive line tight end coach in the NFL for 19 years in a row, and a damn good one too, is gone after 4 days. Like, I think that is what got Brian Flores fired, whether you agree with his firing or disagree with it, and you can document those things.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot. I mean, the fact that, you know, Brian and Bill Belichick had a pretty damn good relationship, the fact that, you know, they still would text each other and you could see the admiration in that text exchange. And now, 3 days ago, Flores is on another interview and he turns around and says he hasn't spoken to Bill since, and then threw Belichick under the bus in the interview. Like, as far as, you know, respect and the fact that he felt like Belichick cost him the job and tampered with that and got Dable high, like, it's just mind-boggling. Like, that scenario there is very mind-boggling to me, because this is somebody that he was speaking to with love and admiration, and it appeared to be a two-way street on that, and suddenly, because he accidentally let you know about something else he heard, you're just, you know, throwing away somebody you worked with for years. And I don't know, like,
well, yeah, and supposedly they had a great relationship, Flores and Belichick. Supposedly Flores and Van Noy had a great relationship, and then they didn't. Supposedly Flores and Patrick Graham had a great relationship, and then Patrick Graham left and took the DC job with the Giants for less money. Yeah, I mean, that's the reason for this stuff. And you start, as you start putting the pieces together, it starts to look more like Brian Flores is a hammer constantly looking for a nail, you know. So overall, this is where I sit. Yes, I think Steve Ross was a bumbling doofus in 2019. I don't care about the supposed Yacht meeting. That is the thing I'm mad about the most on that, is that they got caught doing it. I don't look. Do you really believe that this doesn't happen from all 32 teams in the NFL all the time? If you think it does, let me ask you this. When the tampering period starts 2 days before free agency, how are players agreeing to terms 15 minutes into the tampering period? Like, you're really getting those details sorted out and agreeing to terms in 15 minutes? Not a chance in hell. So my bigger problem is that they were caught. And yeah, so I think Steve Ross made that $100,000 offer. I don't care about the Brady meeting. I hope there are more black coaches in the NFL moving forward. And I don't think the Rooney rule works. That's where I'm going to cap it off at.
Shake actually just pointed out something awesome, which I think is a great closing moment for this. The first person that was tampered with, that Miami brought into the fold as an organization, was Don Shula.
That's true.
That worked out pretty well, I think.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll see where this takes us here, and we'll put a period on that until we hear some more news. Because hey, any opinions we've had are subject to change based on what comes out, yeah, just like they always do. Let's talk about the Senior Bowl here, Paul. We're finally getting into NFL draft season.
Let's go.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching the Senior Bowl practices here. Now, I was not there, but looked at any piece of film that I could get as far as one-on-ones. And you get a clearer picture of who some of these players are and where they're projected to go on there. So I would say, too, just a couple of just takeaways right off the top is this looks like a very, very strong offensive tackle class, which is great news for the Dolphins. I mean, in Mobile, two of the highest projected players are Trevor Penning, the offensive tackle from Northern Iowa, as well as Bernard Raymond, the offensive tackle from Central Michigan, two small school guys with very interesting stories. Penning, obviously, he's probably going to be the highest drafted player in Northern Iowa history. He played opposite Spencer Brown last year in Northern Iowa. Both kind of built the same, big, a little bit stiff, but big, tall, powerful, have good length. And you see a lot of nastiness in Penning too. He was out there being chippy, picking fights here throughout the week, but very, very solid. And he's projected, if he gets to 29, by a lot of people to get there or to be taken by the Dolphins at that spot. I actually think he's going to end up going a little earlier. Bernard Raymond, great athlete, has only been playing offensive tackle for 2 years, was a tight end before that, and only learned how to play football early in his high school career. He was 240 pounds 2 years ago. Now he's over 300 pounds. Great athlete. Reminds me a lot of Garrett Bowles, the former offensive tackle out of Utah, who's now a Pro Bowler with the Broncos. I think those are the two guys that we're going to be talking a lot about here over the next couple of months.
I love me some Trevor Penning. And I think if Miami does do what we would like them to do and signs two offensive tackles in the free agent class, which is also a strong group, I don't think it precludes you from drafting Trevor Penning if he's in a position that you can snatch him. Because I think Trevor Penning could be phenomenal at guard until one of those tackle spots opens up. And
yes,
suddenly you're mauling people from there.
Say, for example, they got, let's say, talk about like a best case scenario. Say you get Teron Armstead at left tackle and Morgan Moses at right tackle. Penning is there as a value pick. He could start out at guard and then in a couple of years transition to tackle, because if the Dolphins sign a tackle this offseason, or when they sign a tackle, he's probably going to be an older one. So there is that possibility.
Penning could get a little experience if it's Teron Armstead, because he typically misses 3 to 5 games a year.
Right. And you're going to have Liam Eichenberg in it. You're going to have Austin Jackson still on the roster. The goal is for them to not be clear-cut starters here in 2022. But it'll be interesting to see, too, if there's a situation where this tackle class is so deep that, okay, we're only going to sign one tackle, and we're going to let Liam Eichenberg compete with a first or a second round rookie at that tackle spot. Now, I know a lot of people don't want to go back to the rookie well, but I see no problem with doing it. The problem is you drafted Liam Eichenberg and Austin Jackson, one guy who wasn't Austin Jackson, who wasn't very good in college, and another guy, Liam Eichenberg, who didn't have the physical characteristics to step in at day one and play tackle for you. So you made mistakes there. That doesn't mean you turn a cold shoulder to the rest of the offensive tackles this year.
No, it doesn't at all. I mean, it's every mock draft I've done so far, and yes, I've done a few, even though it's hard to do, given the fact that, you know, all things are subject to change over the next couple of months, which is something you and I both love, and the fact that we don't have a head coach yet, let alone definitive coordinators, does make it a little bit difficult. But I've grabbed at least one or two offensive linemen in these mocks, and guys like Zion, guys like Penning, some of the later round guys like Cole Strange, who wasn't in the Senior Bowl, so we'll talk about him later. It definitely doesn't preclude you taking an offensive lineman in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, Zion Johnson, another player that I've got my eye on at the back end of the first round. He played actually left guard and center throughout the week and looked equally solid in both roles. I mean, very assignment sound, and also when he's blocking downfield, has a lot of nastiness to him too. I've seen that a lot on tape. Solid, consistent, nasty, versatile. I think a day one starter here if the Dolphins were to go down that route. One guy I did not like and I'm souring on is Daniel Falele from Minnesota. I mean, look, I don't think being 6'8", 390, 400 pounds, I don't think that's a good thing. And when he was out there blocking on an island, it looked ugly at certain points. And that's the type of player. I mean, to me, responsibility number one is protecting Tua's blind side. And I don't want somebody like that doing it. You know, he reminds me a lot of, if you remember, Zach Banner from USC a couple of years ago, who actually, you know, was I mean, he was a third round pick of the Colts, hasn't done anything in his NFL career, and now he was actually in position to compete for the Steelers starting right tackle job this year, but then got hurt. So yeah, I'm not a big fan, not a big fan of Falele here.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of guys I really did like. Calvin Austin III, the 5'7", 170-pound boundary receiver. The guy did a better job getting off press coverage than most folks in drills. He was consistently winning his matchups all week. He's probably going to be a slot guy at the next level, but at the same time, guys like that are ones that if you get Mike McDaniel in the building, I love even more because of the fact that I think he would take people like Calvin Austin, Jalen Waddle, Lynn Bowden, and Mike Gesicki, and make them movable chess pieces all over the offense and really create some fun mismatches with guys like that.
Right. And those are the players too that I wish the Dolphins in previous years would have spent more mid to late round picks on receivers, because if the rest of your offense is doing what it should be, I'm looking more for receivers that are just going to create separation. And Austin did that all week. He's a small guy, but he got separation really, according to what I saw and based on reports, better than anybody else throughout the week. Also, I'd say that the top two receivers out of this week were Jalen Tolbert from South Alabama and Christian Watson from North Dakota State. Both lanky type receivers, but have that flexibility in the hips to separate. And so when you combine those two things together, you can play outside on the boundary and gain some separation if you've got those skill sets. So those are two players that I see coming off the board somewhere in day two, probably toward the back end of day two.
Yeah, no, he's a guy that I really like, and I think he's probably going to go a little earlier than the back end of day two because he's one of those players that has a tremendous amount of upside. And he's somebody I really liked. And I'm still avoiding the guy that I want to talk about because we don't need him. So I'll go to a linebacker I loved. And it's somebody I really loved going into this. And quite frankly, I'm kind of bummed. I feel like he had a really good week and a really good game. And that's Chad Muma, the linebacker out of
Wyoming.
Wyoming. God, I'm blanking on the name of the state. He's somebody that I've taken in a lot of mocks, especially given the fact that San Francisco won too much for us to even consider N'Kobe Dean, for us to even consider Devin Lloyd, unfortunately, without making a move upwards. And this is a draft, if you look at Miami's roster, we're probably going to have to take two linebackers in this draft because of the fact that I think we've got four linebackers under contract for next season, roughly. So this is probably a scenario where we're going to have to look at two linebackers. And Muma's a guy that can move all over the field. He can win his matchups defeating blocks. And if you watch one example, actually, of Muma's recognition and pursuit, Malik Willis's really long, ridiculous, winding run yesterday, you see he was downfield in pass coverage, came up, scraped through, ran past everybody, including defensive backs, to be the guy that made the touchdown saving tackle. And it's there are so many moments from this week. There are moments in the game where you can see the tools that Muma has. And I've already taken him a few times. I think he's going to be one of those guys to watch as a possible target for the Dolphins.
Right. I'd say somebody who impressed me too at linebacker was Tony Anderson from Montana. Showed a lot more athleticism than I thought he had, especially in pass coverage. So, yeah, when you start looking at that kind of third, fourth round area where the Dolphins are probably going to be looking at some linebackers, I expect it to be deep there. I mean, you've got also here this week, Quay Walker from Georgia and Damone Clark from LSU. So, yeah, a lot of depth here in the draft in those middle rounds. But obviously what I was looking most for for the Dolphins was running back. And, you know, not a lot of the big names here because, you know, they're going to be, you know, underclassmen, you know, Kenneth Walker, Breece Hall, not here, obviously. But still some kind of that second tier. You're starting to see a lot of you saw a lot of that this week, and a pretty good group here in that third, fourth round area, maybe even down to the fifth round. I mean, Brian Robinson from Alabama, I think, was probably the biggest name here, showed a lot of great pass blocking. But as far as a runner, kind of a more what you see is what you get, a tall, high cut running back. I think he's going to be in the league for a long time. Is he ever going to be special? Probably not, but should be able to play on all three downs because he's such a good blocker. Dalvin Cook's younger brother, James Cook, I didn't see a lot of him this week. I'm not sure if he actually was, if he stepped out or what. But anyway, he's a name to keep in mind. Damian Pierce from Florida was the one that really impressed me, and he was the talk throughout the week. Kind of an odd career. He was a four-year player at Florida. This past year had only 100 carries, but he had 16 touchdowns, and he's a little bowling ball as far as power is concerned. So not a lot of wear and tear. And Florida with Dan Mullen, they like to rotate running back so much, but I think they should have given him the ball a little bit more at Florida.
Probably, but there were some big old meat monsters up front on defense that were so much fun to watch, and I want to talk about them, even though Miami does not need defensive tackle help. They're stacked in that department. But Perrion Winfrey and Travis Jones of UConn, had dominant weeks. Winfrey just consistently won his matchups, and you just watch Travis Jones. The sack that he ended up with in the game was so indicative of the week that he had. No one could block either of them this week. They were just destroying every single matchup. And you look at Travis Jones' sack, where he walked the defensive lineman back and knocked the quarterback down with him, and then walked over and touched his feet and said hi. Holy crap. Jones had a better week than I expected, and I'm a UConn fan.
Right, and that was against Dylan Parham from Memphis when he took him and he walked him right back to the quarterback in the game. And, yeah, I mean, I've got two guys, we're right on the same page with that. I mean, I think Winfrey and Travis Jones probably went from mid-round picks to probably talking about second round now. And it would be higher if defensive tackle were more of a high-priority type position in the NFL. Devontae Wyatt was arguably the star of the week, and he has a shot to go in the first round out of Georgia. He was unblockable in drills throughout the week. And Logan Hall from Houston. When I watch him, maybe it's the 92, but looks a lot like Zach Sealer. Obviously, a little lighter than Sealer, a little bit more athletic. But that defensive tackle / defensive end, I think, will be a hell of a player for somebody who plays that three-man front a lot from Houston. So, yeah, a lot of interesting things here. And another one, too, is Malik Willis is going to be probably the most fascinating player, not specifically for the Dolphins, but in this pre-draft process. He went to Auburn, transferred to Liberty here this past year, had nothing around him. But he comes to Mobile, has an up and down kind of week, but on the day that it rained, was a Wednesday, I think, he was the only one that could play seamlessly through that storm. And, Kenny Pickett struggled in it, Carson Strong, Desmond Ridder all struggled in that, but not Willis. He was able to drive the ball through the rain, and in terms of what he can do with his feet, I'm not saying he's Michael Vick or Lamar Jackson, but I don't think he's far off from that. He's somebody that could go anywhere in this draft. I think he's going to end up going really high.
To be fair, saying that Carson Strong struggled with rain, Carson Strong struggled with football as far as this week goes. He had a rough week, but no, I really do like Malik Willis, and he's one of those guys that could come in and start off as the backup to Tua and see where we go from there. I don't think Malik's going to be a first-rounder. I know a few folks do, but it is possible. It's going to very much depend on how he does in the coming weeks at the combine, when they get to his pro day. But he could be somebody that you see really firm up a first round conversation or go as late as the third or fourth round. It's a weird scenario with him, but he had a great week.
Yeah, so we'll see about that. I mean, I think he'll end up going in the first round just because so many teams need quarterbacks, and he has so many skills to be able to mold. I don't think Carson Strong's going in the first round. My comparison for him has always been Mason Rudolph, and I think he's lived up to that here this week. He doesn't make plays with his feet, and yes, he's got a really good arm, but is it Josh Allen? Is it Justin Herbert? Like, I don't think so. So yeah, I mean, a lot of just takeaways from this week. Another one too. We'll end it with a punter.
Well, hold on. Before we end it, then let me just jump in with one quick thing, because it is something that we, until Miami re-signs or figures out how they're going to do what they're going to do with Gesicki, Jake Ferguson's a guy to keep an eye on from this week. He had a standout week, and then if you put him in comparison with Charlie Kohler, who was expected a lot more from, he looks even better. But I mean, he had what, 3 catches, 63 yards, a touchdown. He looked good in his routes. He could be somebody that they look at in the draft if Gesicki and Smythe get away. Charlie Kohler couldn't block, catch, or do anything.
Right. Jake Ferguson, yeah, from Wisconsin. First of all, unless the Dolphins let both Gesicki and Smythe walk, if they draft a tight end, I'm going to lose it. But Ferguson, yeah, he is one player that I think is extremely underrated in this class. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be Mark Andrews, because Andrews is an incredibly productive tight end. I mean, a Pro Bowl guy, had 1,300 yards this past year, 100 catches. Not saying he's going to be that guy, but that style where he just can find open spots in the defense, very intelligent dude. I see it there. And I saw it at Wisconsin this past year. He had, what, over 60 catches on an offense that's not very explosive. So, yeah, I think he could find himself somewhere kind of in that third, fourth round area, depending on how he tests out. And Jake, Camardia from Georgia, punter, bombed 270-yarders this past week.
A razor kicks at 80.
On the same day, you got to raise it too. So we may have to have a whole show on punters. It'll probably
yes.
be our least popular show.
The punter show. Let's punters do
and,
it.
Let's just throw fullbacks in there too. Punters and fullbacks. It'll be a 12-minute show. Nobody will watch or listen to it.
We'll do a punter and fullback mock draft show. All 32 teams. We'll figure out where we're mocking those guys. Let's do it.
Well, I've heard people in the chat here today talk about,
Joe. Oh, there are guys begging for you to do a mock before we even have a coach. Well, cat.
I will tell you this: I would rather do a mock draft than talk about lawsuits or coaching searches any day of the week. And yeah. You have to understand something with me with mock drafts, all right? Like, see, for any wrestling fan out there, like, I'm like the Brock Lesnar of mock drafts. Okay, I show up, I dominate, and I don't do it again. And then you'll see me in a few months, in this case, in a year. Look, on draft day, I nailed the first 9 picks of the draft. And then I think I had 13 for the entire first round. I have nothing to prove. So
you, and this is where you and I balance each other with the draft coverage. You are the one that is awesome at doing the what they will do. I tend to do pretty well with the what they should do. Because if you look at some of the guys I've looked at, and I've been wrong on a few, but we would have potentially Davis Mills as a backup quarterback right now. That wouldn't look so bad. You know, people were talking about the running back thing from last year and how, you know, they should have grabbed one in round one or round two. Guess what? If the Dolphins had listened to me, we would have had Ramondre Stevenson with Elijah Mitchell as a handcuff. Like, and you start looking back at some of these guys that we've looked at. Like, and it's – I think our draft coverage is pretty good, Kat. That's what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, so everyone should be sure to listen to that here throughout – the next couple of months, we'll talk about free agency and the draft. After free agency is when we really start to hit it with the position-by-position previews. We'll have a couple of shows a week. And also, too, what I meant to mention earlier is Mike Gesicki blocked me on Twitter this week. I have never associated with Mike Gesicki. I've never tweeted to him. I don't tweet to players. Never tweeted to him. And on this show, anytime I've talked about him, I've just talked about how he should be handsomely paid with a contract extension. I get blocked by him.
He blocked me, and he blocked the show the week he got drafted. And I didn't say a derogatory word about him. All I said was, oh my God, Dallas Goedert's available. Please go out and get him. And apparently Mike Gesicki took offense to that. So not only does he have algorithms searching for his name being mentioned, but also apparently the day of the draft, he had Dallas Goedert's name, and so he got drafted and blocked me. So good for him. But yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. Lot that's going to be decided here over the last a couple weeks. Hammer, thanks for your contribution there. He asked, do you guys think we should throw in 2023 first round draft to jump people as a contingency against losing those picks? I don't think they're going to lose picks on this, to be quite honest with you. I mean, there has to be a real smoking gun, something in writing of Steve Ross offering Brian Flores $100,000. There has to be receipts. There has to be something. Steve Ross can't be stupid enough to have done that. But I still maintain that, yeah, I do think in some way a conversation like that occurred. I think that's too specific, but that's just my feeling. And you can't take away draft picks based on a gut feeling.
So, sorry, totally related but unrelated. One thing just jogged in my memory, speaking of hearsay and tampering and things like that. It's very weird to me that these allegations of potential attempted tampering for, you know, unnamed quarterback who rhymes with Schrady, when Flo, as a free agent while taking these interviews, supposedly and reportedly has been interacting with Deshaun Watson so that they can figure out landing in the same place together while Deshaun Watson is under contract with the Texans. And last I knew, the Texans didn't give permission to a player to work with somebody that's not even with a team.
I don't know anything about that, to be honest with you.
There was a couple articles about that about a week and a half ago.
Okay. I've heard some whispers on that, but I don't know. So we'll see. That's another thing, is where does Deshaun Watson end up? What happens with that situation? Aaron Rodgers, kind of the same thing. So that's going to do it for our breakdown here of a lot of things. The Dolphins coaching search, the Brian Flores situation, as well as the Senior Bowl week. I'm Brian Catt, NFL on Twitter. Paul is Fanatic_Pick. Find us also on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, the Fansided Network and FinFanatic.com. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.